Curtis is an MC's dream. There are something like 23 different bio versions on his website. I'll choose three. First one is brief, it's just three words. He does stuff. May not be sufficient. There is also a five-word version. He does lots of stuff. And finally, and possibly only on the cusp of being sufficient, Kurt Bonk received his master's and PhD degrees in educational psychology from the University of Wisconsin. He is professor at Indiana University and adjunct in the School of Informatics. He received the Cyber Star Award from the Indiana Information Technology Association, the Most Outstanding Achievement Award from the US Distance Learning Association, and the Most Innovative Teaching in a Distance Education Program Award from the state of Indiana. Kurt has given more than 1,000 talks, probably 1,002 now, so this morning around the globe, related to online teaching and learning. In addition, he has given over 260 publications on topics such as online learning pedagogy, massive multiplier online gaming, wiki books, blogging, open source software, collaborative technologies, and synchronous and asynchronous computer conferencing. He is author of many books, including Handbook of Blended Learning, Global Perspectives, and most recently, The World is Open, How Web Technology is Revolutionizing Education 2009. And if I'm not mistaken, this morning he is wearing an Indiana Jones jacket. Would you please make Kurt very welcome to Moodle Moot AU?
I'm sitting there thinking, in 2000 and 2002, I was in Sydney and Canberra and Newcastle and Wollongong and here in Melbourne. And I distinctly remember this professor in Newcastle, I went and visited him after my talks, and we talked about sharing in Merlot and other websites, and he says, in Australia, we don't share what we do. And about a week or two later, I went off to New Zealand to University of Waikato in Otago. And the faculty there said the same thing. We don't share what we do. They do share in the United States, but we don't share here. We got our little silos. And then I went off to the UK, the third place that actually laughed about my name. I started to figure out what it meant. I was in Manchester and Brighton and all over and Leicester, and the same thing. We don't share here, but they're sharing in the US. I ended up going back home, and people were saying to me, they're sharing in Australia, they're sharing in New Zealand, they're sharing in the UK, but we're not sharing here in the United States. Now, this is 2000, 2001, 2002. Here we are 8 years later, right? But back in 2000, Blackboard was not yet called Blackboard, the pirate. Some of us still trusted them and used them. 8 years later, and a lot has happened. It's not just about the iPad, right? It's not just about your iPhone and smartphones, right? There are so many things happening simultaneously. We've moved from a culture that used technology to enhance what we do by having CDs shrunk wrapped inside books that kids could retest themselves and so forth, or to extend what you do by having your students work with students from Finland and Korea and other places around the world through video conferencing, to having technology transform what you do by, instead of giving your students Harvard business cases, you have them write their own cases on the web and you solve each other's cases. But now, we're moving to the notion of technology to share what we do. And Moodle is the prime example. So if there's any place in which I'm delighted to be, it's really to be back here 8, 10 years later to see what's happened within the Moodle community, to hear from all of you during the next couple of days. We do have this talk posted on the web. You don't need to take notes. There's color PDFs at our website, trainingshare.com. In fact, yesterday's master class are all posted up there at TrainingShare. If you didn't get a chance to get in the master class, color PDFs, and I can send you the originals if you want to. My talk at Deakin on Thursday last week on blended and mobile's up there. My talk at New South Wales next Friday is up there, all up there. The notion is we need to share what we're doing. My publications are at Publication Share, and I'll come back to that. Now I'm going to walk you through this notion of an open learning world. We have a couple books to give away for the first two people to ask questions at the end. And we got three questions at a candy bar. So maybe you'll want that instead. Well, we'll walk you through these 10 openers. And the notion is that if just one of these things had happened, It'd be a revolution in education, but we have 10 simultaneously exciting things happening. Moodle's part of that. It's in opener number 3 or 4, and we're gonna get to that. But there are 9 other openers that are equally important that converge to cause us some, I guess, excitement and optimism, but cautious optimism. I'm a former accountant for CPA, so I have to be a bit cautious when I say things. Anyhow, everything's posted, all the web links are posted at worldisopen.com. I'm working on a free book. So if you don't want to buy this, go buy. I'm working on a free book that we'll put up on the website, the same chapter sequence, just different content. We'll put that up at World is Open. So anyhow, what is the shape of the world? Do you know the shape of the world? Some people have erroneously told us that the world is flat. Thomas Friedman sold 7 million books telling people the world is flat. Has anyone bought this book here? Or listen to the book and listen to the book and learn from it. I listen to it while I run in a little playaway 2-ounce device. You can watch Thomas Friedman get interviewed in YouTube and other places on the web in MIT World. You can listen to podcasts. You can read wiki posts of people summarizing his book. You can find out that maybe in fact the world is flat broke, other than here in Australia. It's the only place I've been to that's not telling me the economy is terrible and in the toilet. But the world might not be flat, as he's saying. Now, he's got 10 trends, and these 10 trends don't spell anything. There's no acronym around them, but we'll come back to that point here in a little bit. His 10 trends hint at technology, education, and the possibilities for change. The first third of his book, in fact, gets at blogging and Wikipedia and Googling and all sorts of things. Then he ventures off into 3 P's. There are 3 P's that simultaneously are happening. New players from Eastern Bloc countries of Europe and India and China and so forth that can compete in an equalized playing field because of collaborative technologies. A lot of online collaboration, right? I had a book in 98 called Electronic Collaborators with Kira King. As I mentioned yesterday in the master class, everyone from Australia returned it because they thought it was the bonking book. But Friedman talks about these 10 trends transforming the world of business and economics, social and politically flattening the world. New players, equalized playing field, and management processes becoming horizontal. Not the cube farms that I was used to as an accountant, right? And I'm a product of distance learning. I took correspondence and TV courses to get into graduate school and then develop some. And I believe that we can learn anything today from anyone else at any time. That's the whole premise of what I'm going to be talking about today, and the premise of the book, in fact. But anyhow, the third edition of his book, the first page, he says, you know, parents are asking me what to tell my kids about this flat world. What do I tell them about education? And so he beefed up the education side of things. And this is about 2005, when his book came out, I was invited to go to Microsoft to talk about the free and open source software world, which I found kind of freaky, actually. Was the world flat? Or is the world, in fact, curved? And does that explain the problems of hedge funds and our loss of a significant amount of our retirement plans, especially in the US and Europe and Canada, right? Maybe not so much here, I'm not sure. My friend David Smith says the world is curved. This is a tougher book to get through than The World is Flat. It takes a few goes, even for those of us who are accountants or CPAs. The world might, in fact, be spiky. Richard Florida says the world is spiky, not flat. Now, he's in Toronto. He's at the management school, business school in Toronto. It's kind of misnamed Richard Florida, Toronto. Of course, most people in Ontario head to Florida all spring. They don't live up in Canada, actually. And he says we have these innovation centers, these spikes, these creativity spikes that people want to live. They want to come to Melbourne and live. They want to go to Sydney and live. They want to be in Seoul. They want to be in Seattle, in Austin, in London, right? People want certain things that these cities offer. And in fact, we don't have an equalized playing field. The world's not entirely flat from an economic or a educational standpoint. So, is the world, in fact, open instead of flat, instead of curved, instead of spiky? Now, I was in Rice University campus in Houston a few years ago when the people who are writing this book were meeting at a pub at a Hilton, and I was sitting next to them working on a similar book. Their book is free. You can download this entire book from MIT Press with many of the people that I'm going to be showcasing here today. They have chapters in the book where they talk about this free and open source software world. MIT Press and Yale Press have done a good job of making their books available as free PDFs, and I'll come back to that. As I finished my book, I started traveling around the world, And I was in Saudi Arabia, and I was in Korea, and I was in Malaysia and Singapore and other places around the world. And people start greeting me like this. In fact, everyone can hold your arms up in the air. You're just the Moodle sign. All right, great. So what is the web? Is this notion of the web an entertainment system? Is the iPad going to be more entertainment, or is it going to be more educational? Alan mentioned yesterday from Adley, he says, you know, there's 150 applications on, you know, the iPad already that are e-learning related. And that's exciting, right? Is the web a writing aid? And my dissertation's on computers and writing, and I look at the internet as a gigantic writing tool, not toilet, a gigantic writing tool. Is it a communications mechanism with Skype and Google Talk, right? Twitter, if some of you are doing Twitter. How many of you are doing Twitter during this conference? Quite a few Twitterers here, right? Is it a means to handle commercial transactions by buying things on Amazon and eBay? Or is it perhaps a social networking device with Twitter and Facebook and MySpace? How many Facebook people we have here? Wow, quite a few people on Facebook here. I think it's a learning tool. I think we need to rename the web of learning. The web of learning. Chapter one of my book is titled The Web of Learning. If we have this focus, if we change the name of the web of learning, I think we focus more on the educational possibilities of the internet. The education underpins economic change. The world may be flat from an economic standpoint to some degree, but it's education, the learning side of things, that are the most important, as the people point out in introducing everything to them. We have many things wrapped around the web that enable us to learn from a personalized learning standpoint. Whether we're talking about shared online video on the web, or wiki books, or blogging, and podcasting, and social networking. Many things wrapped around us to help us all learn from each other, right? There's an explosion of the web 2.0. The web 2.0 is this bucket holder. It's a convenient little bucket holder. It's something you can talk to your parents about, and your spouse, your kids, and so forth. It's a nice, simple term. It's not an academic term. There's grant money in the U.S. anyhow wrapped around this notion of the Web 2.0. I think it's an important term. It kind of gets us to think about the possibilities for learning in a participatory, contributory learning space. But we're at a jumping off point. We're at a point today to go somewhere else. And where that somewhere else is for you this week to start thinking about and deciding and conversing about. With the new version of Moodle coming out, that'll be part of this new space where we're jumping off into. Now, in my book, I wrote some 200,000 words, and I sent it to some friends, and they said, Kurt, you know, the beginning of the book's kind of boring. You need a story like you have the other parts of the book. And that day, I got an email from UCLA, and they were doing the Summer Digs project. And this girl here, who is a rugby player, I was at Australian Rules, we saw Geelong win the other day. It was a great game, except for Auckland people. And she's a rugby player from UCLA, 18, 19 years old, and she's blog posting on her digs in Hope, British Columbia, digging up First Nation people from 12,000 years ago. And I'm sitting at home as an armchair Indiana Jones, hence this garb today. My hat. And my whip. So I'm sitting at home, learning from Lily Henry Roberts, is blog posting, and her colleagues are in Chile, her colleagues are in Mexico, her colleagues are in Egypt, and Albania, and all around the world, getting 12 credits, 15 credits from UCLA, and any of you can sign up. You don't have to be a student from UCLA, you just have to be 18 years old or older. The world became open to any of us to be archaeologists in the real world. You don't have to be an armchair archaeologist anymore. The fact is, she could be conversing with her friends from Hope, British Columbia. And her friends can converse with her through the internet. And I think that's one story. The second story is this gentleman here from La Trobe, right here in Melbourne. I interviewed him 2 years ago, and Friday night I had a chance to meet him finally. Now, his wife wouldn't let him go do his dissertation in Kandahar for some strange reason. She said something about his head being chopped off. She said, "You can't go, David." His name's David Thomas. And David said, "What am I going to do? I have to get a dissertation done, right?" He had been to Afghanistan a few times previously, and he blog posts on his events and journeys there, and he posts pictures, as you can see there. Well, what he did is use Google Earth. He used Google Earth to find 450 sites of interest that nobody knew about. Mosques and military installations and waterways and so forth that no one had any clue existed. And now we can go do the hands-on digging once the city opens back up and the region opens back up. They told me he's been to Libya and Lebanon and Iraq and Afghanistan and some pretty dodgy places. And the most dodgiest place he's been to was where? The UK, because dogs were biting him. He's not too worried, but his wife wouldn't let him go. Discovery News picked up on this, made him the most famous archaeologist in the world for that 1 week and that moment in time. And I picked up on the story and put him in my book. It's the second story of the book, fascinating adventure that he's on. Again, I'm learning from him at home as an Indiana Jones, armchair Indiana Jones. Third story, now this is going in the free book I'm working on, Zach and Mike. Now, some of you know about Zach and Mike traveling around the world last year, solo, 16-year-olds. How are they learning on the boat as secondary students? They're learning through Skype, Google Talk, satellite phones. You know, they're using the web to be homeschooled on a boat, right? They're blog posting on their adventures, they're video posting, and that's how I found out about their adventure. And I could correspond with them. I can ask them questions from Indiana while they're in the South Pacific, somewhere being lost or stranded or wherever. Now, Zach here on the right was from the California area. He traveled west. Michael went the opposite direction. Michael over here, he went east, right? And they met in Cape Town last year. They met in Cape Town and they're having a discussion. They video posted on it. Their chance meeting got further and more exciting. When they were just about to leave, they found out this gentleman out here on the left-hand side, Mineiro Sato, the world's oldest sailor to go around the world at age 73, now 75, going again. Someone 6 decades older than them was traveling to Cape Town, so they stayed and waited for him. And they conversed with him, he mentored them. Someone 6 decades older did a cognitive apprenticeship. We talk about cognitive apprenticeships in education. Here's one live on the internet for the whole world to watch, something will never ever happen again, never happened before, and it's open to the world because of the internet. The internet brings home this notion of learning all the time. People are learning in informal situations, as the woman said earlier in the video that was played. Informal learnings become as important as formal kinds of learning, and they're a prime example of that. They had blog posted on what was going on there. Now, we all know that an Aussie beat the two guys. And by the way, Michael was the youngest person to go across the Atlantic Ocean, but Zach beat him going around the world. The unfortunate thing is that Michael was a month younger when he got into port in Plymouth, England. So the Brits had the record for a brief moment in time, and now you in Australia have the record, Jessica Watson. And Zach's sister was going around the world to try and beat her. And you all know that she got lost. A big wave, 30-foot wave, tried to, you know, turn and capsize her boat. It didn't, but she was stranded. And Qantas Airline was hired to go locate her, right? And this is all on the internet as well. We can learn about all this online. So my notion today is that we can all be learning from someone else all around the world and helping in their learning, right? Like in Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, their treasure wasn't gold, it was knowledge. Knowledge was the treasure. With 53 trillion pages of content on the internet, hopefully there's some knowledge nuggets and not just bare bones information. I'll take bare bones information, but I'm looking for knowledge, I'm looking for it. I like the movie too. Okay, how many saw the movie? How many of you liked it? The older, how many younger people liked it? One person. Okay, well, I'm going to give you 10 trends. We're going to walk through 10 trends that I think are changing the world of education. They spell the acronym We All Learn. The first 5 get at content or stuff on the internet. It's the next 5 that are the most important, at least to me, in terms of where we're going. So web searching in the world of e-books. You might say, Dr. Bach, that's 2 trends. And I'll say, you're right, you need the web to get access to those darn e-books. But you really don't. I'll point out to some people in Western China that are learning through online means without even having access to the internet. You might need to have a foundation or an organization in your community that's impacted by the internet. Number 2, e-learning and blended learning. The we part, this is the explosion part. Then the all, the availability of open source software, and that's right here, this conference is number 3, right? Open source and free software. Some call it the FOSS movement, some see the FOSS free and open source software movement is two movements, free software and open source software, two different things. Then we get into leveraging our courses and putting courses on the web. And how many of you work at a university that put at least one course on the web for people to just check out? Yeah, a lot of you are, right. Part of this open content alliance, potentially. Leveraging your resources like MIT. Now, MIT put 1,900 courses on the web for free. And you might say, well, there's no instructor behind it. There's no credit behind taking it. I was standing next to the Minister of Information of Pakistan a few years ago. He said, kids in Pakistan are learning MIT content free in the world. They're finding out that they can learn college-level material if they only can get access to it. So this is very important. More than half of the people using the MIT contents are not traditional college students or professors. They're people in the real world, corporate people getting retooled, reskilled. So we get into number five, learning object repositories and portals. And I thought when the book came out, number one and number five were the least important. They've in fact become the most important in the news, and I'll come back to that. Every day there's an announcement about eBooks and an eBook reader lately. Every day there's an announcement about shared online video and a video portal. I've indexed 40-odd video portals at TradingShare.com if you're interested in video, and I've written about how to use video and wikis and stuff. So number six gets us into Wikipedia and YouTube, learner participation in open information communities. Then we get into electronic collaboration, alternative reality learning, which also includes cases and scenarios, low-risk stuff as well as high-risk Second Life. Then we get into mobile learning, portable learning, and personalized learning. Okay? We all learn. Okay. We'll get the people on this side of the room, you'll be the we's. People in the middle, you'll be the alls. People on the left, on the right, my right-hand side over here, you'll be the learn. So, one, two, three, we all learn. Not too bad. So in education, we have a different set of three P's. The P's in education include piping or infrastructure. Some of you are on the internet right now, checking email. How many of you are checking email, right? Usually in the back. Some of you are interested in pages of content, what Ron Oliver and Edith Cowan called shovelware 10 years ago, and Kathy Ruth-Laughlin at Australian Catholic called shovelware stuff, right? Pages of content, 53 trillion pages, and we only need a small percent to be educational, then to be more than we could ever read. And then we got the participatory learning culture. That's where the change is happening. So those three P's coming simultaneously, including these kids at Yonsei University in Korea, participating in their learning process, learning English language through games. As I was there a year ago, the first floor is for interaction, the second floor was for collaboration, the third floor was for individual learning and solo learning, the fourth floor was for something else. Every floor of the library had a different learning event going on. Okay, first opener, we got web searching in the world of ebooks. We got Shakespeare online, right? Free Shakespeare, everything Shakespeare ever wrote is free on the web through Google, through MIT, and other places. My book's available on short covers. I didn't even know what short covers was until someone told me they downloaded it and put it on their iPhone. So many ways in which to learn books in a mobile fashion today. What happens when we have web searching in the world of ebooks? We all, let's try this again. We all learn. Okay. So, where do we look? We have to look west to California. The governor of California is trying to save some money. There's $26 billion in the hole, and they spend $300 million a year on books. So they're trying to create digital books, and I don't think they're going to save any money initially in California. I think they're going to be a benchmark for the rest of us. They're going to provide some guidelines on what's going on. Now the Koreans as well, the Koreans want digital books throughout K-12 curricula by the year 2012. They're experimenting with 100 schools today, with hyperlinks, with animations, simulations, study questions, review notes, all sorts of things in their digital books in Korea, the Digital Book Project. And we have to look to Canada. Of course, the Canadians like Terry Anderson here in the upper left. He put a book up on the web for free on the theory and practice of online learning through Athabasca. Hundreds of thousands of people have downloaded it, so many that he has version 2 now that you can download. My friend Cory Doctorow in the bottom left there. Cory is a science fiction writer. Cory has dropped out of college 4 times. or he didn't complete college. Yet he became the first Canadian fellow at USC last year. And why? Because he's the editor of Boing Boing, a very popular cultural blog, and he does free books. His books are science fiction, and he makes them available for free, or you can buy them. And he says it's like dandelions. Blows the seeds up all throughout the universe, right? And people pick up his book. So he says he sells more books by making a free version available. Of course, we've got Steve Jobs promoting the iPad. How many iPad holders do we have here? People ordering the iPad, right? Some people say it's a social device that we connect and use it together with people. How many of you own an iPad, have shown someone your iPad, and have done some socializing around your iPad, right? It's a social tool more than laptops have been, apparently. But we have the potential for a revolution with the iPad because it is opener number one, ebooks. It's opener number nine, mobile learning. It's potentially opener number two, e-learning. It's potentially opener number eight, online gaming. It has a number of the openers we're walking through. It's a convergent device. Maybe we'll have James Bond watches that are even more of a convergent device soon. Opener number two, I have Oprah Winfrey. And if you don't know Oprah Winfrey, she's a pretty famous host in the afternoons in the US. And she taught a class last year on spiritualism on the internet. 2 million people took her course for free. 2 million people. And she had 600,000 simultaneous downloads of the video lectures. 600,000. In 1995, I connected CUCME and PictureTel. How many of you remember CUCME or PictureTel? Well, we combined them together. I got a note from my president. He says, Kurt, you've got 20 people in the class. You're gonna take down the internet. Don't do it. Don't do it. That was a big warning, but we did it anyway. It's written up if you're interested. We combined two video conferencing systems together. Now here we are 15 years later. 600,000 simultaneous downloads and we yawn. No one notices it. 4 million kids in the US learning college online, a million, more than a million today in K-12 schools online. We're yawning on it. It's front page news, it's side news and so forth. In 1950, if one person learned on the internet, that person, would have been Time Magazine's Person of the Year. But today we've got tens of millions of people learning online. And in 10 years, it will be the majority of people will at least have some online experience, some blended. All courses will be blended. And we'll yawn at this. It's just part of who we are today. It wasn't that way when I was here in Melbourne 8 years ago. We were in our silos. We don't share. Today, people are sharing. Today, of course, Bill Gates is reactionary, like always. It's a top 10 initiative of the Gates Foundation, e-learning and blended learning. He wants intelligent filtering through all the lecture content. He doesn't want all the duplication of lectures on the internet. Why do we need 29,000 lectures on Accounting 101, right? Then we got people like Salman Khan. Now, Salman Khan was tutoring his nephews and nieces in Bangladesh and in India. And people caught up on this. He was teaching them about chemistry, teaching them about math and algebra and statistics and economics. Over 1,000 free videos, and he's pretty cool. He does little marker board kinds of things. He learns every content imaginable. He's got like 3 degrees from MIT and 2 from Harvard. This is not a dumb kid. And he's made this stuff available free to the world. Now his wife's not happy with him. How many of you got a spouse who's not happy with you doing all the free stuff for everybody else? You know what I mean? Well, he did 1,000 free things. And by the way, I'm working on 27 videos on how to teach online. They're all going to be free to the world, little 10-minute ones if you're interested. Just write me a note. But Salman did this, and he's labeled the most popular professor in the U.S. now, according to the Chronicle of Higher Education. One person can change the world. My whole notion of the world is open book is that one person can change the world. This gentleman here is the most famous e-learning person in my city, in Bloomington, Indiana. And he doesn't check his email. His wife's a sociology professor. I had to write to her. They saw their son struggling with the SATs. Now, by the way, I got a 19 on the ACT, which couldn't get me into Lower Potomac State University today. But today I can learn from Stanford. Today I can learn from Berkeley. I couldn't even get into the university that I went to today with those test scores, right? This guy here is doing something about that. He's created a website called A Free Grain of Rice, where if you get an answer correct, 10 grains of rice are donated to third world countries. We've got 400 and some people in the room. Imagine if every one of you had an idea like this. The world would be transformed in education. If we had 450 ideas like this, what a wonderful place this would be. And it didn't take much to think of this thing. Just watch this sun. There you go. And I got addicted to this. I'm not good at vocabulary. You shouldn't see my scores, right? This is addictive. And kids at recess time are now going online to learn language. And it's geography as well, and maths as well, and chemistry as well. So he's expanded it to other disciplines. What a great idea. With advertising at the bottom, millions of tons of metric rice have been donated to Miramar, Nepal, and Tibet. This little woman here, call her a woman, she's almost like talking to a graduate student. We had dinner a few months ago. She's billed as the world's youngest teacher. She's been teaching since she was 6 years old through a Prometheus smart board she uses, or a webcam she uses. She teaches kids about writing, about geography, politics, history. She teaches teachers about writing and using computers, technology for writing. Any language and literature people here? They want to hire her up. Her name's Adora Swivtak. She's now 12. She's been teaching half her life, and she's ready to retire. Okay? And she's got three books. Flying Fingers is the first one. She types 100 words, 110 words a minute. Imagine if you had a daughter at age 6 was typing 110 words a minute, writing books. She has a TeacherTube account with 1,000 videos, a YouTube account, Facebook account, poetry on the web. But she's not ahead in math or science, so she can't go to college, to university yet. She's way ahead in literature. She wants to teach, be a teacher. The internet enables her to learn and teach online. The internet enables Michael Purim to learn while he's on a boat, enables Zach to learn while they're on a boat traveling the world. Enables David Thomas to become the most famous archaeologist in the world without going to Kandahar. You see, there's so many ways to teach and learn today. We've got to get out of our silos, out of our ways of thinking. And Julie Young's among those. And back in 1995, when I was using CUCME, I stopped in her office. She had 12 students at the time in a Florida virtual school down near Disneyland. But you can see today, she's pushing 71,000 students in one virtual high school in Florida. It's the biggest high school in the United States. People are using content in other states. They're renting the content that they've developed. You can see the credit hours, 154,000 credit hours. On my way here, on Tuesday, I'm getting on the plane. People in North Carolina heard I'm doing this talk, and they said, Kirk, can you give it this slide, put it in your talk? So you won't find this one at Training Share. This is a new one I just slipped in. You can see the growth they're looking at in North Carolina. Now, North Carolina has a Learn to Earn project, where if you go to high school for 5 years, you get a vocational associate-related degree, a two-year college degree. North Carolina has the lieutenant governor behind e-learning. They had nobody learning online in 2005. By 2006, they had 6,000 or a couple thousand people. By 2008-09, they're at 60-some thousand people in 2009-10. You can see the growth they're looking at, over 600,000 credit hours in a couple of years. E-learning is exploding at the community college level, which is called vocational education, and middle school and high school in the U.S. and around the world. At the Indiana University High School, I can trip on as I walk across my campus, but none of the instructors, the professors on my campus know it exists. But when this little university becomes bigger than Indiana University in a couple of years, they're going to have to take notice. When we have musicians, and this guy in the bottom right's a flutist. He's been teaching Native American flute since he was 6 or 7 years old, and he learns from the Indiana University High School while he's in California. I'm grading papers, listening to my TV station. I put on his music. I found out he's a high school student on my campus from a distance. How cool is that? And we've got a family going around the Caribbean. They picked up their boat in Brazil. Their daughters were taking courses on their boat. Ship-dock captains were practicing their exams when they came to port. Retired teachers in Granada were grading their stuff. They upload and download when they're in port. They practice their French lessons when they're in port. They blog posts for kids in schools in Chicago and so forth, where they had been coming from. When they got done, they said, we're not moving back to Chicago. It's too darn cold. We're moving to Charleston, South Carolina, where the teaching's not so good, the teacher's not so good. But the kids had learned self-directed learning skills on the boat that helped them survive inferior teaching that they had. But my friend Bruce Colston here in the middle in the bottom says, yeah, you got people in the opera, ballerinas in New York City. We got political activists in Hillary Clinton's campaign. Zach there. Could be why she lost. I don't know. You know, what do you see here, by the way? Can anyone tell me what they see? Just shout it out. What do you see? You see a city, Minneapolis, oh, good guess. This is a smart audience there, Philip. Minneapolis, okay, all right, give me that. What else do you see?
Halo Tower.
That halo tower, good, you got it. I walked outside my hotel room in early February, stuck in Minneapolis and stuck in Fargo the week before. It was not a fun place to be. So I'm sitting outside in the freezing cold and the concierge says, what do you see in the distance? I said, I don't know, it looks like skyscrapers. He said, no, that's e-learning. E-learning because the Halo building has been renamed the Capella Tower. Capella is a university, a fully online university. When you see in the distance learning, and you don't see banks, accounting agencies, but you see learning in the distance, times have changed. When Shaquille O'Neal, star of the Basketball Association, gets his degree from the University of Phoenix in a blended fashion, times have changed. Oprah Winfrey teaching 2 million people on the web, times are changing. You got a 12-year-old kid teaching teachers how to teach. That's pretty bizarre stuff. Okay? Now in the distance, I'm from Wisconsin originally. I went this way a lot of times from Minneapolis. I like dread going to Minnesota in the winter. We went up that way. And now you see learning. In Denver, you got Jones International University. It looks like Dune, the book Dune. He's purposely built it. You see learning in the distance in Denver. How bizarre is that? California, they got a $26 billion deficit. They're spending $250,000 a course to put all their introductory college courses on the web in the California state system. They're gonna be putting up Western civilization. They're putting up biology, chemistry, physics, calculus, linear algebra, international relations, differential equations, the whole nine yards. Their plan is to put them up and get sponsorship from corporations and donations and other things, not from the state budget necessarily. They don't have any money, okay? This is totally strange stuff going on. There's another strange one, I was in Malaysia. On the right hand side, I was in Malaysia a month and a half ago. The Open U of Malaysia has gone from 800 students in 2001 to 90,000 today. They're growing by 10,000 students a year. Now, I had a professor do a sabbatical with me in 2000, and she left to go back to the Open U of Malaysia at the start of the university. Imagine working at a university that grows that fast. Imagine working at Indira Gandhi Open University with 2 million students. Rentham University in Thailand, 600,000 students. 8 of the largest 11 universities in the world are from Asia, all over 100,000 students. Now in the U.S., we've got 18 million college students, university students, of which 4.5 have taken at least one online class. Up 20-25% have taken at least one online class, but the growth is 17% at the online side of things. It's 1% face-to-face. 1% growth face-to-face, 17% growth online. Where do you think administrators are putting their monies? They're putting it in new online courses in red there, as you can see, not in established face-to-face courses. And in Mexico, where I was 2 months ago, they're going from a couple percent of students learning on the internet. A decade ago, 1 in 50 Mexicans had internet access. Today, we're talking about 1 in 4, 25%. And the Open University of Monterey and other places are taking advantage of that with tens of thousands of new students in Mexico. In Florida, can't build buildings fast enough in Central Florida. Central Florida University is the largest university in Florida. It's bigger than Florida and Florida State. Every time I go, there's new buildings, new parking structures, but yet they're doing online. That's the only way they can keep up. Blended learning with Tegrity and other technologies. I hear Echo 360 and so forth. Well, Chuck Subin, Patsy Moskal, and Joel Hartman do research. If you want to convince faculty about the impact, go to Central Florida, go to the Research Initiative for Teaching Effectiveness. They have a million data points about online learning, a million data points from decades, over a decade of research online. If you don't like their research, go to the federal government, from Stanford Research Institute did a US Department of Ed report, Evaluation of Evidence-Based Practices in Online Learning, a Meta-Analysis and Review of Online Learning. They showed in this meta-analysis that blended is best, fully online second best, and face-to-face comes in a far third, way back in the past. So if you got faculty saying, hey, face-to-face is better, I'm not gonna do online, print this report out and hand it to them. It's a nice little summary, I don't have to read too much, read the abstract, read the ending. If you don't like that, go to the Sloan Foundation, Sloan Consortium, every year has an annual report on the state of online learning. Now, granted, those reports are based on U.S. I'm sure you have your own here in Australia. Koreans have their own. Now we go on to opener number three, Black Borg the Pirate. And if you haven't seen my blog post, my blog's Traveling Edman, a few years ago I wrote about Black Borg the Pirate. If you want to get a little chuckle, maybe. I don't know. So here we've got Black Borg biting everyone else. And my university has Sakai, the Iron Chef on television, right? Chef Sakai. So I asked Brad Wheeler, my campus, Brad, what do you call it, Sakai? And he said, well, Michigan gave $2 million to build this, and they got the chef tools. And they said, we should call this the Enhanced Chef Tools, the Collaborative Higher Education Framework Chef. MIT gave $2 million, Stanford gave $2 million, Indiana gave $2 million, and the Hewlett Foundation gave $2 million. $10 million to create Sakai. They overpromised and underdelivered. This is being taped, I can say this, don't watch this, Brad. But now Sakai's ready. Now we have two tools. We have Moodle and Sakai, two good tools to combat the Blackboards of the world. All right? The pirates out there. Hopefully. Oh, we got. Okay, thank you, Harry. I'll get back here.
Oh, we got. Oh,
there we got Martin. Okay, well, you know, when you talk about Moodle, now, we practiced earlier, right? Everyone can say it with me. 1, 2, 3. Moodle. Let's try it again. 1, 2, 3. Moodle. All right. We've got cats using Moodle. We got, you know, Yoda's using it. Mel Gibson here in Australia's using it. You know, we got smiley faces, dogs, and cats, and everybody's using Moodle. Pretty bizarre stuff is happening. When you got how many people? You got 35 million users, 930 registered, 213 countries, 50,000 sites, 3.5 million courses. I think Blackboard's going to take notice of 3.5 million courses being taught with Moodle. This is a huge thing that wasn't in existence 10 years ago when I was here, 8 years ago when I was here, but now things are changing through Moodle. Opener number four. We're going to opener number four. Again, in the past, we weren't sharing. In the past, we said, you know, sharing is like pirating. Now, by the way, the prequel to my book at World is Open website is called Sharing the Journey. If you're interested in the prequels posted up there and so forth. Now, it's all part of what we do. You know, the woman there in the middle, my friend Wendy, she's freezing to death there, right? She's learning from MIT contests. She's got her ear pods in, her iPods are in her ears. She's listening to physics courses, chemistry courses. She can take them as many times as she wants. She can upgrade her skills whenever she wants to. Fascinating today that we can be learning online from MIT when we want to, from the Open U in the UK, from universities in Japan. You know, the second university that put their courses on the web was not Stanford, was not Oxford. It was the National University of Vietnam. Because they didn't want to lose the knowledge they had there from Fulbright scholars in economics, right? So here's Wendy. She said, I don't do any homework. It's great, self-determined learning. Now, maybe 25%, maybe 30% of the whole world population are self-determined learners, but this is addressing those kinds of learners nonetheless, right? That never had the chance to learn before. Now, Chris Anderson from Wired magazine has a new book called Free. His book came out maybe about a year ago. The unabridged audio is free. The abridged, you have to pay for. Kind of a weird, quirky thing, but he said people are busy. They'll put the abridged version up and make them pay for it. Berkeley's put up all their courses in iTunes and YouTube. Now, when you go up to Berkeley and YouTube, there are like 250 universities today at YouTube EDU. If you haven't seen YouTube EDU, it's worth checking out, right? There's some really interesting presentations across all content areas in YouTube EDU. Now, when you get a woman, you barely see her picture there in the middle, her name's Marion Diamond, and she's a famous biology instructor at Berkeley. She had retired. She taught 5,000 students her entire career, 30-some years. Within a month of her retirement, they brought her back to put some online lectures in biology. Hundreds of thousands of people have watched each lecture. She's impacted tens of thousands of people more, 10 times as many more people, 100 times as many as she ever did face to face. She's a celebrity professor, and she's really good. She's really good. Any biology people here? You're familiar with this one probably, yeah?
Shaking her, yeah. Next to her, above her, Sergey Brin. Y'all know Sergey Brin, right? Founder of Google. This stuff goes up on the web again. Millions of people watch his lectures done at... It's not for one campus anymore. iTunes. We've got Stanford in iTunes. There's no way I was going to get into Stanford ever in my life, right? No way. But today I can learn from Stanford professors, and I don't have to be a pirate to be doing so. Today I can get courses from around the world. You get the syllabus, you get the lectures, you get the calendar, you get the notes, you get the exams. There's no instructor necessarily behind it, but that's coming. The days of new instructors. Let's get, oops. Now, the first time I gave this talk, it was called, oops, I didn't mean to share that, for my good friend Lucifer Chu. Now, Lucifer Chu, self-named beacon of light, is a white angel, not a dark angel. Lucifer's in Taiwan. He translated Lord of the Rings to Chinese and made $1 million by age 26. Unfortunately, ladies, he just got married. So he made $1 million. He took half of that money. He's translating MIT courses free to the world for the Chinese-speaking population in simplified and traditional Chinese. One person can change the world with one great idea. It's not just about MIT contents. He's taking all sorts of university contents that's on the web, making it available in the OOPS project, the open source, open courseware prototype system, OOPS. And he is the janitor of OOPS. Yesterday in the master class, I asked you if any of you were janitors, remember? He's a janitor of OOPS, the most, probably one of the most important people in the e-learning space in the world. And you don't even, how many of you know Lucifer before I mentioned him? One of the most important people in the world, and you don't even know he exists, because he's doing it silently, you see. First time I did this talk, he came on stage with me to tell people about. Now, he dresses as a gamer, all black. He's Gandalf sometimes, as you can see here. He has the world's largest voluntary translation team in the world, and we studied the community of practice at OOPS. We looked at the apprenticeship process of OOPS, so that other people could be translating into French, Spanish, and other languages, right? Now, when you got the free contents, you need a place to put it all. You have two places you can go. Somebody's saying, Dr. Bond, where am I going to go to find this stuff? You can go to the OER Commons, Open Education Resource Commons. It's indexing all the free courses of the world. That's pretty cool. To me, since leaving the world of accounting in 1985, 86, 25 odd years ago, when I was 8 years old, this is the most significant thing that's happened during that time. Now, again, there's nobody grading your content. You can also go to NROC, the National Repository of Online Courses, which has both K-12 and college contents. How many K-12 primary secondary people do we have in the audience here? And quite a few yesterday, quite a few today. So NROC, National Repository of Online Courses, you might want to take a look at. When you got all this free stuff, you might want to repackage and repurpose it. And here are two people doing that. Shay Reshef, originally from Israel, created Cramster.com, sold Cramster, and now has created the University of the People. The University of the People, a free university. They had 180 students last year, the first semester, for computer science courses and writing courses. They had 800 instructors, 5 instructors for every student. Times are changing. You got 5 instructors for every student, right? Pretty bizarre stuff. At a free university. You think we're in trouble now? Maybe, maybe not. He wants to get accreditation. We'll see what happens. Not sure. He's using the free contents that exist to offer a free university. Now, he repackages it. You actually, there's a sign-up fee based on your country. If you're in a developing country, it's $20. If you're in a developed country, it's $50. And there's a fee to get your tests graded. But other than that, everything is free. And it's self-paced on your own. Now, the woman in the bottom left, I guess I would say, is from Peer-to-Peer University, P2PU. Kind of like our Indianapolis campus, IUPUI, Ui Pui. P2PU. They offer guides and tutors, wayfinders, through the online content. They don't accredit you. They don't give you a degree. They don't give you a certificate. What they do is help you learn content on the web with a tutor, with an aide, with a guide. Opener number 5 is open access contents, free stuff on the web. There are over 1,000 free open access journals in North America. There are 96 in Oceania. There are 600 in Asia. There are 400 in Africa, over 1,500 in South America, and so on and so forth. In Europe, almost 1,000. Stanford University has pushed in the area of open access journals. They've created a way for journals to put their content on the web for free. And this is now exploding around the world. I teach a class on the Web 2.0, 32-page syllabus, and not a single thing they have to buy. Everything's a hot link from a free open source article on the internet. But it's not just about text. It's not just about text on the web. We're moving to video. We're moving to video in a huge way today. Elliot Mazie from the corporate space, Elliot says, you know, it's a disruptive technology. We've got video blogs, webinars, webcasts, keynotes. This talk's being filmed, put it up there. Nobody's gonna watch it, maybe I'll watch the other ones. So much video today, you can have your students watching keynote from conferences and reflect on them in their blogs, bring them into class, bring those keynotes in after they watch the video, have a synchronous discussion after an asynchronous event. They'll typically hate the person asynchronously and love the person synchronously, whack them in the head. As I said, there are over 40 sites I've found for shared online video. If you go to trainingshare.com, you get links to all these and many more. You want to learn how to fix your toilet at home? Go to Howcast or Wonder How To. You want National Geographic specials? Go to Link Television. Right? You want to hear from famous authors and famous technology people? Fora TV. Global Pulse, Latin Pulse. If you're a teacher and want your kids exposed to things in South Asia or in Latin America, Global Pulse and Latin Pulse are part of Link Television. Educational TV without borders. Television without borders, in effect, right? You want TeacherTube for K-12? Cool stuff. There's so many sites today for video. As I said, Link TV. My friend John Bauermaster did a series called Ocean's 8, where he goes by sea kayak to Antarctica, the French Polynesia, to all parts of the world. And it's all free now through Link Television. And they have the GLOW Network, Global Link for World Educators, with curriculum wrapped around it for secondary and middle school. So if you want guides and aids, check out Link TV. If you want to hear from famous people like Bill Gates and Steve Jobs and so forth, you can go to Fora Television. The woman here transformed Washington, D.C. schools. As she's talking about that, Howard Gardner, the famous multiple intelligence person's in the audience asking her questions. And I'm watching this. This is a fascinating interaction between the two of them. Oh, and I didn't mention TV lesson. TV lesson, expert lesson plans. I got a phone call from a student applying to my doctoral program in Mongolia. She said, we're watching TV lesson today because of the H1N1 has exploded so much. You know, why is it that Hurricane Katrina, why is it that H1N1, why is it that SARS, why is it that tsunamis cause us to be open to online and blended learning? Why does it take a disaster? Why does Snowmageddon all of a sudden enable the faculty in Washington, D.C. that we interviewed this fall to say, hey, we're going to do online learning now? This is bizarre. We should be more proactive than that. If you haven't seen Academic Earth, Academic Earth is a website indexing the world's best lectures. Pretty cool website. In my book, I talk about colossal squids and gigantic squids. The world's largest mollusk was found in Antarctica by mistake. This fisherman he was looking for the Antarctic toothfish, also known as the Chilean sea bass. He caught a colossal squid. They brought it to Wellington, New Zealand. Anybody from Wellington, New Zealand here? You know about this story, right? It took 14 months for the people of New Zealand to figure out how to thaw it, okay? Normally it wouldn't take that long for New Zealanders. Maybe I don't know what they're doing there, but 14 months. Okay? We won't pick on the Kiwis at all. No. When they thawed it out, the interesting thing that happened, they thawed it live to kids around the world so schools could pick up on what they found. You don't have to wait 3 years to get into books anymore. It's live. Science goes live today. You find out it has eyeballs as big as soccer balls. Those are the lenses of the eyes. You find out it has a translucent body. You find out it has claws that can kill whales. Well, maybe. It's nothing I want to find under the ocean anytime soon. Scientists didn't even have any clue about this. You know, and here it goes live. And then 2 months later, this gentleman finds a gigantic squid off the coast of Santa Cruz, and CNN covers it live. This was dead, unfortunately, when they found it. But still, science is going live around the world. When I got back from Korea a year ago, May, I was in the Indianapolis airport, and I bought a book called The Link. I went home, and I looked up the link in Google. I Googled it, and there's a website on The Link. And there's this gentleman here who found the link, or bought the link, right? This missing human link, right? And he's live on a video explaining that day. Sir David Attenborough is explaining this link. Their scientific article comes out in the Public Library of Science. Now, the Public Library of Science is providing free journals in genetics, biology, and other areas because they're too expensive normally. So a lot of free journals from the PLOS people. Their article on this species came out that day. The website went live that day. The book came out that day. Kids in schools around the world could find out about it the same day scientists could. And it's only possible because of the web and the internet, right? Free. The world's open for learning. When this gentleman was dissecting a brain of someone who had half his brain removed, or part of it, in the 1950s and died 2 years ago, he donated his brain to science. They analyzed his brain live on the web. I didn't look too carefully. I only took a quick scan and I left. A few months earlier, this website went live from Cambridge. It's a website on Charles Darwin to celebrate his 200-year anniversary of his birth, 100-year, 50-year anniversary of origin of the species. And what do you find out about Charles Darwin? Everything he wrote in his whole life, love letters to his wife, what he had for dinner, all his papers. How could he do all this stuff? He had a laptop computer. Now we know. Now we know how he's able to do all this stuff. You know, imagine if he had a laptop computer. He'd been put in jail when he came into port, right? He'd been put in jail. Samuel Pepys had the world's, you know, most famous diaries of the 1660s. 1660 to 1669, he's an admiral in the British Navy. He had a dang laptop computer too. And my friend Phil Guilford, he's blog posting it one day at a time. What a brilliant idea. Blog posting, linking it to Wikipedia, linking it to Google Earth and Google Maps, hyperlinking all the stories, so you find out more about Samuel Pepys than even Samuel Pepys knew. Now, he's living through the Great Plague, the Great Fire. He liked his women, he liked his beer, he liked his alcohol and other things, you know. So it's quite an interesting diary to read or a blog post, right? Now, it's not just about Samuel Pepys, but in the 1800s, Thomas and Jane Carlyle wrote letters to Charles Dickens, wrote letters to Mary Shelley, wrote Frankenstein, wrote letters to Alfred Tennyson, and those have been indexed and cross-linked by Duke University, all free to the world, all free to the world. Portals of content. I thought portals of content were not important. I thought ebooks was not important. Number one and number five are very important. Now we've got the Royal Society putting up all their work on the web for free. Captain Cook's work, Sir Isaac Newton, Benjamin Franklin. Now we've got Merlot connections in Durham, Merlot. Anthropology to zoology, all free to the world. Peer index. Merlot has peer reviews of content. It's a repository instead of links. Connections out of Rice University, from this gentleman, Richard Baranek, is a repository. The actual stuff is there. And now Durham in the UK was only Brits only before. Now it's free to the world, J-O-R-U-M. These are repositories of free stuff. Connections is K through university. Merlot is only university. But they have a conference and a journal and so forth. Number 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, I'm going to walk through the next 5, 10 minutes and finish up. But the most important. Number 6 gets us into learner participation and learning. Thanks to the YouTube guys, thanks to Wikipedia, thanks to places like IBM, which has 17,000 employees blog posting. 5 years ago, you worried about one employee blog posting. Now they got 17,000. They got 500,000 participants in their crowdsourcing jams. 53,000 employees on their social networking tool called Social Blue. We got Wikipedia. Now this gentleman here dropped out of my university to create Wikipedia. His name is Jimmy Wales. So I tell all my students to drop out. Do something good with your lives, right? It's not just about Wikipedia. It's Wikisource and Wikiquote. So you don't want crowdsourced content. Wikisource is the original papers of Darwin and Piaget and whomever. Anna Freud, Sigmund Freud, Wikisource, Wikiquote, quotes from Shakespeare, Jane Austen, and others. I went to their headquarters last year. 10 employees. They were on a hiring spree, hiring 2 people. And they're servicing millions of people around the world. This woman here, her name's Cool Cat Teacher. She videotaped me in Atlanta a couple of years ago when I was dying. I was on my last talk. There's nobody in the audience. I just flown in from D.C. the day before. She said, I'm going to Twitter on it. And I'm going to blog post, and I'm going to Ustream you. Ustream you. Oh, what do you mean Ustream you? So I put a little camera up, and people can watch it. 2 minutes later, this woman here, her name's Jennifer Madrell, says, tell Kurt we're Ustreaming the Ustream live in New York City to 1,000 people. I had 3 people in the audience in Atlanta, 1,000 people in New York. Now, she's a master's student of mine. I knew her. So when you Ustream the Ustream, we should have live ed, not live aid, pardon me, we should have live ed with international educational celebrities teaching each other something around the world. When Barack Obama has a BlackBerry, when the Dalai Lama has a Twitter account, when the Dalai Lama does a podcast and the Queen is uploading YouTube videos, times are changing. The Queen has the Royal Channel. It's a pretty cool place. If you haven't been there, check it out. When people can go to Sega Ghana, my friend Yan here went to Sega Ghana, studied Badwin Agudi's school, helped him out, filmed it. He had no running water, no electricity, no support, no computers. She put it on the web, and now he has all that. People are donating it, and he's now my friend. I went to Current TV, Al Gore's network. It's soon going to be called the Tipper TV, because they're getting divorced, you know. Tipper TV. So I went to Current Television. It was the award-winning film of the day. She won awards. My friend Yan, she became my friend. She's a computer programmer. She knew nothing about filmography when she graduated, but now she's internationally known because the web enabled her to change her occupation. My friend Jonathan Ziltry, literally unknown in law, wrote a book called The Future of the Internet and How to Stop It. Maybe you can discuss this at the Moodle conference, Bill Benoist and Alan. The Future of the Internet and How to Stop It. It's a free book from Yale Press, and it's annotated. You can comment on the book, and it'll talk to you. It's one of the most popular downloaded books of the past couple of years. And if they hadn't made it freely available, it might not have been. And his friend Yoki Bankler, The Wealth of Networks, both at Harvard, not The Wealth of Nations. It's a wiki. You can translate it and do all the things you want with his book, right? Share it. Participatory e-books, Scribd. When I left Wikipedia, I walked down the street to Chinatown in San Francisco, and I walked into Trip Adler's office at Scribd. Now, Trip is now 25 years old. When I went there, he's 23, and ladies, he's single, and he'll be a billionaire soon. Trip is an interesting guy. He tripped into this notion of text on the web. He created iPaper, interactive paper. So now you can download Plato's Republic in milliseconds and share it and comment on it. My qualifying exams were posted to Scribd last year. 3 people had read them in 20 years. By the end of the day, 100 people read them, discussed them, shared them. Millions of people are using Scribd to share genealogical records, music scores, poems, love notes, papers, books. It's YouTube for text. What a fascinating place this is. Opening number 7 gets us into collaborate or die. Collaborate or die. We can talk to people in Iraq, in Brazil, in India, full motion video conferencing for kids in schools using IP-based, internet-based video conferencing. Now this is Global Nomads Group, which actually does cost money, but most times teachers are doing this without any costs at all. I think this is the most important thing that we should be doing today, and that is getting people to make perspectives of one another with technology. If there's any part of the openers, of the 10 openers that we should focus on, it's global sharing, global partnerships, it's social cognition, so we don't have more Afghanistan and Iraq and so forth and so on. I think we need synchronous conferencing. You can bring in people on the fly. I went to Manchester Business School in 5 minutes. I went to China and Southern China, South China Normal within a couple days. Brought John Traxler from Wolverhampton to my class. The Dalai Lama is doing live streaming, as I mentioned. I brought in Telegirl, as you can see. And Telegirl had her pink wig on, so I had to put my pink wig on as well. So yeah, synchronous is exploding today. I brought 6 or 7 people to my class this spring from around the world, and students loved it. We're building collaborative spaces, not just online, but on campus today. Today, we're refitting campus buildings to foster collaboration, to foster interaction and active learning. And soon, we'll have teleported instructors. In fact, in Canada, they already teleport instructors to the remote parts of Ontario and Alberta. But telepresence from Cisco, so you look like you're in the same room. I got interviewed by San Jose people with telepresence technology last spring, and it looked like I was in the room with them. Number 8, alternative reality learning, Second Life, virtual worlds, where we have law at Harvard being taught in Second Life, with a father-daughter team. She's got online office hours. He has face-to-face. We got IntelliGirl teaching English classes. She has a book, Second Life for Dummies. I know nothing about Second Life, so I'm reading her book, Second Life for Dummies. We have hot tub chats of guest authors at Pepperdine University. We have teacher training in Georgia. We've got medical training in Texas. All across the U.S., people are using Second Life for training. Mobile learning, learning with smartphones and whatnot. Rwanda's got 40,000 people a week getting mobile access, 160,000 a month. India's got 15 million people a month getting mobile access. Where are we going to go when more than half the population of the world has a mobile phone? We're going to move to mobile. Everything's moving mobile. 60,000 people an hour getting mobile access. That's the size of my city every hour of the day. You know, that's hundreds of thousands of people a day, a million people a day. We got people like Paul Kim to thank for this. Paul Kim from Stanford has got the Pocket School Project, where your teacher is in your pocket. He takes this little $50 MP3 player with literacy training on it, Spanish training, maths training, science training, through games. And he takes a cranked bike and he puts it on a bicycle to recharge it for $30 bike. He has a school for $80, $50 plus $30. So he's going off to Rwanda, India, Honduras, Mexico, and inner city schools in the US. And he's using the Pocket School Project to get kids excited about learning. And soon we'll have a tablet computer. Tablet computer for less than $100, according to Paul, by December. We already have the One Laptop Per Child project, which costs a little more than it was supposed to, but this costs are coming down. When we simultaneously have costs coming down, we have terabyte memory sticks eventually that cost the same as this 64 gigger, right? Terabyte memory sticks in our pocket, what becomes knowledge? What becomes important knowledge, right? Farmville. My son used to play Halo, bang 'em up, shoot 'em up, and you know, we all worry about our kids playing these violent games, right? I said to my son Alex, he's 22 now and finishing college, I said, what are you playing? You playing Halo? He says, no, play Farmville. He says, that sounds nice. What are you doing in Farmville? Well, we help each other grow plants. It's a much better idea. And look at it, in 1 year we've gone from a violent notion of gaming to all these Farmville, 90 million kids playing Farmville, helping each other grow plants. We've changed, education has actually changed, right? A gentleman from Stanford created a flute and a horn on your mobile phone and your iPhone. I was in Austin, Texas a few months ago. I put this on and at dinner someone downloaded the application. And we're all playing his phone during dinner. Pretty cool. You've got Wiki Reader. You want to keep up with the wikis? Wiki Reader. You've got Twitter Peek. You've got all these mobile devices wrapped around us today. You've got this new device, Museum of London Street Museum, where you can look at what the streets of London looked like in the 1900s, 1800s, 1700s, 1600s, 1500s. Really interesting. Finally, personalizing our learning environments, RSS feeds and blogs, Facebook, MySpace, and all sorts of things where we can personalize learning. We can get tutors from India. We can get tutors and graders to grade assignments, to mark. Wouldn't you like marking help coming from India? You know, I'm recommending that to my president. Get some marking help. I'll stay in the job. I won't quit ever, you know. Facebook, you know. You can have a class Facebook account. 90 million people are in Facebook, right? Twitter. This gentleman uses Twitter, and the students Twitter questions behind him as he's lecturing in the hot seat. I think he's crazy. He's at Purdue University. We call it Purdue down in Indiana. Language learning has exploded on the web. Chinese Pod, French Pod, Italian Pod. 300,000 people a month download free podcasts at Chinese Pod. They thought English Pod would take off before the Olympics, and they were wrong, as people from Australia, UK, and US wanted to learn Chinese. Chinese Pod took off. And Italian Pod has videos wrapped around it, all free, and they sell premium services over the top. Live Mocha. In the Starbucks of Seattle, Live Mocha was created by the guy who created email on the BlackBerry. His name is Shirish Nadkarmi. He saw his kids struggling with their Spanish when they went to Spain. 3 years of high school Spanish and they couldn't use it. So he created Live Mocha where you can have live exchanges. You can sign up to teach a language or take a language. So that's, I think, the last one I have here. Predictions of the future.
Indeed, you are powerful, as the Emperor has foreseen.
Predictions of the future, where are we going with all this stuff? I mean, there's a lot going on today, right? What's going to happen next? In the book, I have 15 things. Let me just point out one or two things. Teaching and learning is pervasive. We have teachers all around us. We have the world's youngest teachers. We have the world's oldest. There are people over 100 years old on Facebook teaching people stuff, right? You know, it's amazing what's possible today. And if we go to the number two in there, super-E mentors and coaches. Super-E mentors and coaches are people that have domain expertise in sociology, accounting, or whatever. They have human development skills or counseling skills, and they know how to use the internet as a teaching and learning tool. Those people will be golden, I think. You can read about the other 14 odd predictions of the future and where we're going, but we do have questions. Technology people, administrators need to ask, what do we do about open education resources on our campus or at our school? What do we do about open source software? What do we do about e-books and mobile learning? Instructors need to think about, am I going to be a concierge when I teach, a credit manager when I teach, a counselor when I teach, or a course facilitator? What is my role with all this free stuff on the web? And students need to think, do I take all this free content and put it on my resume or not, on my CV? So this talk was about the options we have in front of us. The book is about the options we have in front of us. Hopefully you can all choose wisely as a result of all. You chose poorly. Hopefully you can choose wisely. Use the We All Learn model. It's one cut at what's out there. It's one way of thinking about things. Yesterday I presented my R2D2 model with 100 activities online if you want more specifics. This is big picture. This is big picture where we're going. You want specifics. There are many things you can do. Those people with us yesterday know. The slides are posted at Training Share. Again, I'll put a free book up eventually at World is Open.
I'll be back.
And Martin and I will be back after lunch for a debate. So I want to thank everyone for coming. I will field two questions for two free books and see if anyone has a question. Yes? That's a good question, really. I would like to be going to extreme learning. I've created this concept of where you can learn from trains, planes, mountaintops, and that's my next research area. It's going to be looking at how we teach from Antarctica, teach from unusual places with technology, or learn from unusual places with technology, what I'm calling empowerment moments. I want to combine my psychology background and my technology, where I'm going to look at human development and how people's lives have changed from one moment in time. What's one thing that has changed one's life, like being in the Iraq War and learning online, for instance, or teaching about penguin populations from Antarctica. Things, that's where I'm going. You'll get a book. Yes?
I've just got a question around, or give me some of your thoughts around formal government policy around online learning and learning.
About government policies around this? We lack leadership in the US, but where leadership exists is in Korea, Singapore, and the UK, for instance. I just studied blended learning across 5 countries, and you can definitely see that there are countries where you can get the definite leadership about e-learning. In fact, many Asian countries see e-learning as an economic endeavor. They see it as part of their economic plan, if you will. We don't in the U.S. We have not done that well at all. In Australia, you have many government-based reports, but I don't know if you look at it as an economic component or a part of your economic engine. I think you're really looking at it from an educational standpoint here in Australia in the reports that I've read. Australia kind of goes up and down like Canada. Every few years you get a phenomenal report out of Australia, New Zealand, the same thing, and then you don't hear anything for a few years. That's my take on things. But in the US it's definitely flatlined. We have nothing, you know. So we lack, at least for 8 years, we lack leadership. Maybe now it will change. Yeah, you'll get a book.
I'll
give you two things real quick, and we need to take a break. I think Phil's saying we have tea breaks. So, two things. One, if you ever spend an hour just type in your domain expert, your domain area, whatever it is, accounting, social work, type in expert blogs, podcasts, wikis. You'll find within 1 hour more than you ever could imagine. And if you could hire out an assistant for an hour or two. You have to spend a small amount of money to get that little bit of help for $50, $100. You wouldn't believe what someone could help you find. So between 1 hour searching and 2 hour searching. Second thing I'll say is trainingshare.com. I posted a whole bunch of resources. So if you can't find something, go look at websites like that one, or Merlot, or Connections. You'll find more than it's content based in Merlot, so you can find by discipline. So I would look at Merlot, look at the OER Commons, find a few quality sites, and you'll find more than you need. You get a candy bar. Thanks everyone for being here.